For the next week, the town seemed to hold its breath, waiting for more trouble to break out. Nothing happened, though. The gunslingers Matt had hired must have stayed close to his ranch. They didn't come back to town anyway, and that was all Jason really cared about. Another wagon train came through, stopping in fury to stock up on supplies. The wagon master was a burly, balding man with a short salt-and-pepper beard. His name was Jim Austin, and Jason remembered him as an old friend of his father. Austin greeted Jason as they stood in Nordstrom's Mercantile, where Jason had come in search of the wagon master.
Jason Fury, by God, it's good to see you, son. I heard about what happened to Jedediah. Damn shame. He was a fine man. Why, I remember the high old times we had back when we were Yonkers. Me and Jedediah and your Uncle John. Whatever happened to that fiddle-footed uncle of yours anyway?
Have you picked up any news along the trail, Mr. Austin?
The Comanches still raising hell over in Texas and New Mexico territory. What do you hear about the Apaches?
Keep your eyes open and circle the wagons tight at night. It's been less than 2 months since a band of them attacked the town here, right after it was established.
Them bold devils. Attack the town, you say?
We were able to drive them off, and they haven't been back since. I'm hoping the settlement has grown enough by now that they'll steer clear of it from now on, but I don't reckon we can count on that.
Can't count on much of anything where Apaches are concerned. Except they'll give you trouble sooner or later. Heard tell that Juan Alba's been raiding north of the border again, too. Just what we need to go along with Apaches. A gang of desperados made up of Mexican banditos and every other kind of border trash.
I've heard about Alba. Thank goodness he's left us alone so far. Some of the things I hear about him make him sound worse than an Apache.
That's because he's half Mex and half Apache. And the worst of both. Sort of like crossing a rattlesnake and a scorpion, I reckon. Ugly as hell, and you sure don't want it biting you.
Any other news?
Well, they've started building a railroad that's going to go clear across the country when they get done with it. Or so they say. When they run rails from one side of the country to the other, I reckon my day and the days of men like me will be done. Won't be no more wagon trains. So there won't be no call for wagon masters anymore.
It'll take years and years for them to accomplish such a thing. Maybe even decades.
I wouldn't count on that. Once folks in this country get their minds set on doing something, there ain't hardly any stopping them. Only thing that ever slows us Americans down is when we go to squabbling amongst ourselves. Like that there war we just finished up not all that long ago. Lord, I hope we don't never have to go through something like that again. One other thing you might want to know about. Funny thing happened a couple of nights ago. Some fellas rode up to our camp and hello'd, asked if they could come in and share our supper. I told them to ride in nice and slow-like so we could look them over. Can't be too careful out on the trail, you know. I didn't much like the cut of their jib, as an old sailor I knew used to say. But there was only six of them, and we're well-armed. Got men who know how to use their guns, too. So I told those fellas they could share our supper, but they'd have to find some other place to camp. They seemed to take that all right, and they didn't cause us a lick of trouble while they was there. Now here's what might interest you. The fellow who seemed to be the ramrod of the bunch asked me if I'd ever heard of a settlement called Fury. I said sure. I'd heard talk about the place whilst we was in Tucson. The fellow said that's where they was headed, and wanted to know if they were on the right trail.
Did these men tell you their names?
Nope, and I couldn't very well ask. I recognized the hombre, though. Saw him a couple of years ago in Santa Fe. Name of Gallister. Heard of him?
Flint Gallister?
One and the same. Once I realized who he was, some of the other fellas looked a mite familiar, too. Pretty sure one of them was Little Ben Williams, and another was Trapdoor Hargity. I see them names mean something to you.
They're gunfighters. Hired killers.
Yep. They should have made better time getting here than we did. You seen hiding a hair of them?
No, but there are enough people in town now that I suppose they could be here, and I just haven't noticed them.
One more thing. Gallister asked me if I knew how to find a ranch belonging to a gent named Dixon. I told him I didn't have no idea about that. You know this fella Dixon, Jason?
I'm afraid I do.
What's going on here? You got all hell about to break loose around here, son?
Jason knew the answer to that, and wished that he didn't. A little while later, Jason was talking to Ward Wanamaker and Wash Keough. The three men were in the marshal's office, Jason behind the desk, Wash in a chair in front of it, and Ward on the old sofa that had been moved in, a donation from one of the families that had moved into town.
I'm going to have to ride out to the Slash D and warn Dixon again not to start any trouble.
I've crossed trails with Flint Gallister a few times. He pretty hates star packers, Jason. He's liable to take one look at a badge on your chest and slap leather.
Well, I'll have to take that chance.
It won't do any good. I hate to say it, Jason, but maybe we ought to just let Matt and Dixon fight it out. They're both so stubborn and so convinced they're right, they'll never listen to reason.
Maybe you should take a ride over to Camp Grant and talk to the commanding officer there. Just because that shaved-tailed lieutenant who rode by Matt's place said the Army can't get involved in this trouble don't mean you couldn't convince the commander otherwise.
Maybe. This was all government land to start with around here, so they've got a stake in what happens, I guess. I'll give it a try if I can't get anywhere with Matt and Dixon. I've asked Jenny to talk to Matt, but she thinks he hasn't done anything wrong. And she's right, I guess. Matt has just as much right to the land he's claimed as Dixon does. It's not like he's trying to take over the whole Slash D. Really, I'm not sure Dixon would ever miss that range if he let it go.
He's just too mule-headed to do it.
Exactly. Too stubborn and too proud. I'll go talk to Matt one last time.
Good luck.
Keeping his eyes open for Apaches, gunslingers, or any other form of trouble, Jason rode Cleo out to Matt's ranch. Now, in addition to the house and the barn, a bunkhouse and some corrals had gone up. Jason had to admit that the place looked good. Matt could probably make a go of it if he had the chance. Bill Rye and Nib Sloan lounged on stools in front of the bunkhouse. Jason didn't see the other two gunmen.
Howdy, Marshal. What are you doing out here?
Looking for you, boss.
What the hell do you want, Fury?
I came to try to talk some sense into your head. There's still a lot of open range north of town where the Mortons have settled. Dixon hasn't bothered them. Chances are he wouldn't bother you up there either.
Take a look around. You want me to just walk away from all this work because of some crazy old man who thinks he owns the whole territory?
I just don't want you getting killed, Matt. I know we've had our problems, but my sister seems to think the world of you, and you've got a sister yourself. Think about them.
I am thinking about Jenny. This is going to be her home someday. And that day's not long off, either. Do you know I asked her to marry me the other day? She said yes, too. I'm going to be your brother-in-law before much longer, Fury. What do you think about that? If you want to browbeat somebody, go see Dixon. He's the one causing all the trouble.
Have you heard of a man named Flint Gallister?
I don't think so. Why?
Ask Rye who Gallister is. He'll know. Then tell him that Gallister is working for Dixon, along with little Ben Williams, Trapdoor Hargity, and some others just like them. See what he thinks about that.
Matt gave him a hostile but somewhat puzzled stare as Jason mounted up and rode away from the ranch house. Dixon wouldn't wait long to send his new weapons against the enemy. At least now, Matt would have some warning. Jason was mulling that over as he rode back toward Fury, thinking so deeply that he wasn't paying much attention to anything else. It took the distant sound of guns to pull him out of his reverie. His head jerked up, and his eyes widened in horror as he saw several plumes of black smoke rising in the sky in front of him.
No! Yeah!
He dug his heels into Cleo's flanks and sent the Palomino mare racing toward Fury as hard and fast as she could gallop. A cloud of dust began to rise ahead of him, competing with the smoke to mar the clear blue sky. A group of riders came into view at the base of that dust cloud, small black dots that quickly resolved themselves into the men on madly galloping horses. Jason hauled back on the reins as he realized that 40 or 50 men were charging straight at him. Some of them were twisting around in their saddles to fire behind them with revolvers, throwing lead to discourage pursuit. Out of habit, Jason pulled his rifle from the saddle boot and cocked it. Then he suddenly came to his senses. When an avalanche was coming at you, there was only one thing to do. Get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah! Ah, ah, ah!
Jason wheeled the Palomino to the left and put the horse into a hard run, heading for a cactus-dotted ridge about 500 yards away. Jason felt as much as heard the wind rip of a bullet past his head. Dirt and pebbles spurted from the ground ahead of him, kicked up by the slug slamming into the earth. Jason twisted in the saddle and brought his rifle to his shoulder. Cleo continued running smoothly as Jason began to fire, cranking off round after round as fast as he could work the weapon's lever and pull the trigger. With dust choking his throat and stinging his eyes and bullets whipping around his head, Jason had no chance of seeing whether or not any of his shots found their targets. More than anything else, he was hoping to buy a little time, the few precious moments he needed to get out of the way of that wild, gun-blazing charge. Leo had speed and stamina, and even more important, the mare had sand. She never quit. She just kept running, giving Jason her all, until horse and rider reached the base of the ridge and swept up the slope. Jason let Cleo have her head. It took only a few moments to reach the crest of the ridge. Jason swung down from the saddle in a hurry, taking the rifle with him, then snatched off his hat.
Get on! Go!
He used it to slap Cleo on the rump and sent her charging on down the far side of the ridge. Jason whirled around and threw himself down on the ground. He poked the rifle barrel over the crest and squinted through the dust at the small army charging past on the flats below him. Rage flooded through him as he nestled his cheek against the stock of his rifle. Near the front of the group was a huge man with a jutting black beard, a sombrero with silver balls dangling from its circular brim, and a blood-red serape that had been jerked around by the wind so that it flapped behind him like a cape. A name sprang into Jason's mind. Juan Alba, the scourge of the borderlands. Near Alba, a horse suddenly took a tumble. The rider sailed out of the saddle and slammed into the ground, rolling over a couple of times before he was trampled. Several riders peeled off from the main bunch and headed for Jason's position, firing as they went. Jason stayed low to make himself as small a target as possible. He was gratified to see one of the outlaws sail backward out of the saddle like he'd been punched by a giant fist. But the rest of Jason's ammunition was in his saddlebags on the Palomino. After that swat on the rump, Cleo had dashed off a couple of hundred yards.
Son of a bitch!
Jason started running toward the mare. Behind him, the three remaining outlaws thundered over the top of the ridge and galloped their horses after him. Cleo's head came up. She spun around and started toward him, cutting the distance between them. Jason might have made it if a rock hadn't rolled unexpectedly under his foot and caused him to fall rolling down the slope, scraping exposed hide on the rocky ground and brushing against a cactus. The outlaws were almost on top of him. He dropped the rifle, but had somehow drawn his Colt. He rolled again to avoid the slashing hooves of another horse and found himself sliding into a shallow gully. He twisted around and snapped a shot at one of the remaining raiders. The man jerked in the saddle and hunched over. He tried to bring his gun up for a shot at Jason, but the man's face disappeared in a red smear as Jason's bullet smashed into it. That was enough for the fourth man. He yanked his horse around and fled back toward the top of the ridge. Jason let him go. He lay there in the gully, trying to catch his breath. He pushed himself to his feet, took fresh cartridges from the loops on his shell belt, and thumbed them into the Colt cylinder, reloading in case some of the outlaws came back. From the looks of things, though, they weren't going to. The dust cloud was moving off to the south now. Jason spotted his hat on the ground, picked it up, and signaled to Cleo again. While the Palomino was trotting over to him, he found the rifle he had dropped. He checked the barrel to make sure it wasn't fouled, then reloaded it, too, before he slid it back into the saddle boot. Then he mounted up and rode to the top of the ridge, stopping just short of it so he wouldn't be skylighted. From there, he could see that the outlaw horde was indeed moving on to the south. They were at least a half a mile away now. They had to be heading for the border, Jason thought. Juan Alba probably had a stronghold somewhere across the line in Mexico. Jason topped the ridge, hurried down the slope, and turned the other way when he reached the flats. The pall of smoke that hung over Fury was beginning to thin. At least, some of the fires were out by now. But as Jason galloped toward the settlement, he dreaded discovering just how much death and destruction had been left behind by the raid. Jason felt sickness churning in his belly as he approached Fury and saw an overturned buckboard. The two horses that had been hitched to the wagon lay dead, in black pools of blood that had gushed from their numerous bullet wounds. The poor animals had been riddled with lead, as had their owner, who lay face down on the ground about 10 yards away, as if he had fallen while trying to flee from the outlaws on foot. The back of his shirt was soaked with blood. He had been shot at least half a dozen times. His head was twisted so that Jason could see one side of his face, which was now frozen in a permanent grimace of fear and agony. Jason recognized him as Ed Willett, one of the newcomers to Fury, who had arrived only a week or so earlier. Willard had planned to start a farm. And Jason guessed he'd been heading to town to pick up some supplies when he saw the raiders coming. He hadn't made it to safety in time. Not that anybody had been much safer in the settlement, Jason thought. The outlaws had swept right on into town, shooting, looting, and pillaging. Jason grew even more sickened as he reached Main Street and saw the bleeding bodies of people and horses littering the ground. Men, women, even children had been slaughtered, with no thought of mercy or compassion. Jason had been through Indian attacks and had seen their grim aftermath. In a way, this was worse. At least the Indians were fighting for what they considered their own way of life, barbaric though it might be. This was just pure evil. The front window of Nordstrom's Mercantile was busted out. A million pieces of glass covered the porch and the floor inside. Randall Nordstrom was slumped backward over the sill, unmoving. His chest was a gory mess, looking like someone had unloaded both barrels of a shotgun into it. Jason looked past Nordstrom's body into the wreckage of the store. It had been thoroughly looted, the outlaws carrying off everything that struck their fancy. Across the street, the livery stable was still burning, although the flames were dying down since the roof had already fallen in and the walls had collapsed. The stink in the air told Jason that some of the horses had been caught inside the inferno and never made it out. The old man who ran the place and his Mexican hostler lay in front of the stable, both of them shot dead. Several houses were nothing but piles of ashes, including the one where Michael Morelli had his medical practice and his family's home. Jason hoped that all the Morellis had gotten out safely. He turned his head, dreading whatever terrible sight he would see next. It was Abigail Crimp's place, burned out inside, even though the adobe walls still stood. Jason didn't see any sign of Abigail and wondered if she was inside.
Jason!
Startled, Jason jerked around in the saddle and went for his gun. He stilled the instinct as he saw Saul Cohen running toward him. Saul had blood on his face, but he seemed pretty spry and wasn't moving like a wounded man.
Thank God you're here, Jason. It was awful, just awful. Like something in a war.
Jason glanced toward Saul's hardware store. It seemed to be largely intact, although the front window was broken, and it looked like the door had been kicked down.
Saul, your wife, your kids.
All right, all of them, thank God. I got this cut from some flying glass, but that's all.
What about Jenny and Megan? Have you seen them?
I don't know. I just don't know, Jason. I haven't seen them, but I'm sure they're all right.
What about Ward and Wash?
They're around somewhere. Ward took a bullet in the arm, but I don't think Wash was hurt at all. Both of them put up a fight. They got a few of the bastards.
Well, what about Dr. Morelli?
Trying to help the injured, the last I saw. He was setting up what he called a field hospital in the Crown and Garter.
What about Morelli's family?
I don't know.
Both of them looked around. Selman Kendall's wagon rolled toward them, with Selman at the reins, whipping the horses. His wife Carrie was at his side, clutching Selman's arm. Carrie's daughter Chrissy peered over their shoulders from the back of the wagon. She held a gray, squirming bundle that Jason recognized as her dog Rags. Carrie was a pretty blonde, but at the moment her face was tense and drawn with worry. Selman pulled his team to a halt and leapt down from the seat. Jason was glad to see that his friend was hale and hearty, unharmed by the outlaws.
We heard the shots and saw the smoke. I wanted to come right on into town, but Carrie insisted on coming with me. Said with all hell breaking loose, I couldn't leave her and Chrissy alone on the farm. I figured she was right. Took me a while to get the team hitched up, though.
You did the right thing. A gang of outlaws did this, and you wouldn't have wanted them to catch the women folks alone on the farm. I got a hunch this was Juan Alba's bunch.
Just then, Wash Keogh came striding up, looking mad enough to skin a bobcat using only his teeth.
Yeah, you're right. I heard some of them sons of bitches yelling back and forth and called Alba's name, the bastard. I'm begging your pardon for the language, ma'am.
Don't trouble yourself, Mr. Keogh. Men who would carry out atrocities such as this deserve to be called bastards and sons of bitches.
What do we need to do, Jason?
The well seems to be all right. Put together a bucket brigade and get the rest of the fires out. I don't think you'll be able to save any of the buildings that are already burning, but we need to keep the fire from spreading. When you find people who are hurt, but able to get around on their own, send them to the Crown and Garter. Dr. Morelli is there, tending to the wounded. Anybody who's hurt too bad to walk, put them in Salmon's wagon, and he can take them to the saloon.
You don't think there's any chance those bandits will come back, do you?
I had a little run-in with them south of town. They were going hell for leather toward the border. I don't see them turning back. Looks like they already got everything they came for.
The next couple of hours were like a nightmare from which Jason couldn't wake up. He moved from building to building, checking the damage, the wounded, the dead. Much of the destruction was wanton and senseless, killing and burning just for the sake of savagery. It hadn't been enough for Alba's raiders to clean out the settlement of everything valuable. It was like they had tried to drive a stake into the very heart of Fury. Ward Wanamaker caught up to Jason while he was making his grim tour of the town. A blood-stained rag was wrapped around Ward's left arm.
Ward, how's the arm?
It didn't bust the bone, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Well, you worry about it if it festers and you get blood poisoning. Go over to the Crown and Garter and let Dr. Morelli take a look at it.
Aw, damn it, Jason!
Go on. It shouldn't take long. And I'll be at this chore for a while, figuring out just how bad things really are.
As Jason continued his inspection of the town, he looked for his sister and Megan. He hadn't seen either of them so far, but at least he hadn't found their bodies. He could tell himself that they were still alive. Cyrus Valentine had his wagon out and was gathering up the bodies. There were so many, he didn't have room for all of them in his undertaking parlor. Jason glanced into the yard behind the building and shuddered as he saw corpses stacked up in a shed, like cordwood.
I'll get to everybody as quick as I can, Marshal.
Grab a couple of men to help you. Tell them I said for them to give you a hand.
Cyrus nodded and hurried off to implement Jason's suggestion. The Marshal moved on to the Crown and Garter. The saloon's tables had been turned into makeshift hospital beds by spreading blankets over them. A couple of wounded men were lying on the bar itself. Michael Morelli was fishing around in the chest of one of them, evidently looking for a bullet. The doctor's sleeves were rolled up, and his arms were smeared with blood to the elbows. Morelli glanced over as Jason came up beside him.
This is almost as bad as Shiloh, damn it.
You were there?
That's right. I was one of those butchers who lopped off arms and legs until the piles of them were so big they almost forced us out of the hospital tent. Lost more than half the men we operated on. But we saved some of them. We saved some of them, damn it.
Do what you can, Doc.
Morelli lifted the forceps in his hand from the wounded man's chest and tossed the misshapen chunk of lead he had just removed into a basin which contained at least a dozen more bullets that had been taken out of human flesh.
Marshal, have you seen any of my family?
Afraid not.
I saw the house. One of those bastards must have tossed a torch into it. Some of them had torches. They threw them all over town. Didn't seem to care what they were burning down. I'll close up this fellow. As soon as that's done, you can move him to one of the tables and bring me the next man who needs surgery.
Jason left Morelli to go about his bloody business. As he went back out into the street, Jason saw Kerry Kendall coming toward him, along with Chrissy and the two older Morelli children, Constantine and Helen. Kerry was carrying a blanket-wrapped infant.
Is that the Morelli baby?
It is. Constantine got them all out the back of the house when it caught on fire. He was very brave.
What about Olympia?
She sent the children out but stayed behind to save some of Michael's medical supplies. I don't know what happened after that.
Take the kids on into the saloon. I'm sure the doc will be happy to see them.
Jason looked around and saw Matt McDonald and some of his men riding into town. Jason noticed that Bill Rye and the other gunslingers weren't with them. Matt had a frantic look on his face as he dismounted.
We saw the smoke and knew it must be coming from town. Got here as fast as we could. Where are Jenny and Megan?
I don't know, Matt. I've looked pretty much all around the town and I haven't seen them, but at least I haven't found their bodies.
It's not enough, damn it! You men, spread out. Find my sister and Jenny Fury.
But Megan and Jenny were nowhere to be found, and as the afternoon waned, Jason called a meeting in the marshal's office, which had been untouched by the outlaws for some reason, with Ward, Saul, Wash, Salmon, Matt, and Dr. Morelli to take stock of the situation. The ashes of Morelli's house still hadn't cooled completely, but several men had risked burns to sort through the rubble. To Jason's surprise, they hadn't found any sign of the doctor's wife, Nor had an exhaustive search turned up several other citizens of Fury. Everyone was accounted for, except Megan McDonald, Jenny Fury, Olympia Morelli, and Abigail Crimp.
We gotta face it, Jason. If them women ain't here in town, dead or alive, then there's only one thing that could have happened to them.
Jason looked around at the grim faces of the men, and knew they had all reached the same conclusion he had. Megan, Jenny, Olympia, and Abigail had been kidnapped. The band of vicious outlaws led by one Alba had carried them off when they left Fury after the raid. And as for where they were taking the women, and what fate was intended for them, God only knew. God and the devil called one Alba.
What are you gonna do, Jason?
Only one thing to do. We're going to go after them and get them back.
Well, now that's mighty easier said than done. That gang of desperados is like a small army, and they're probably well on their way to the border by now.
I don't care how many of them there are, and the border means nothing to me. We'll hunt them down wherever they are.
Just so you know what you're getting into.
Someone will have to loan me a rifle. I'm afraid mine was destroyed when the house burned up.
You're not going, Doctor.
Damn it, they have my wife. I have to go.
You're the only doctor in town. You're needed here. Some of the folks who were wounded may not pull through if you're not around to take care of them.
I'm sorry about that, but Olympia is more important... You're right, of course, Marshal. I know you're right. I swore an oath, and I have to live by it. But at a time like this, it's hard. By God, it's hard.
We'll get your missus back safe and sound, Doc, along with those other ladies. You just wait and see.
You're not going either, Ward.
What?
Somebody has to stay behind to maintain law and order here in town. You've got a little experience at that, and you're wounded to boot.
Well, this little scratch? Hell, Jason, it don't amount to nothing.
It might if it's not cared for properly. Anyway, I think you'd have to stay here even if you weren't injured, to look after the town. That bullet hole just makes the decision a little easier.
Easier for you, maybe.
Well, I'm going, and you'll just be wasting your breath if you try to talk me out of it.
Now, I figured you for one of the members of the posse. What about your men?
That'll have to be up to them. I can't order them to go chasing after a bunch of bandits.
Count me in, too.
And me.
Both of you have families.
And if it was our wives missing, all of you'd be willing to help. We've got to stick together, Jason. When those outlaws raided our town, struck at us in our own homes, they hurt all of us, whether we actually took a bullet or got our house burned down. We're all wounded in a way, and we've got to get the sons of bitches who are responsible.
All right. You'll need good saddle horses, guns, and plenty of ammunition. Spread the word. Any man who wants to come along should be out in front of the office here in about an hour. The sooner we get on that gang's trail, the sooner we get those ladies back. Let's get started.
Within an hour, approximately 30 men and even more horses were milling around in the street outside the marshal's office. The extra mounts would be taken along in case anything happened to some of the saddle horses. Also, when the women were rescued, they would need mounts too. Might as well be optimistic about it, Jason thought, as he looked over the group. The crowd included the assembled posse and the townspeople who had gathered to watch the group get ready to ride. In addition to Saul, Salmon, and Wash, several other men from the wagon train had joined the posse, including Zachary Morton, who had ridden in from his ranch north of town. A gunsmith by trade, Zachary was an old-timer with plenty of years under his belt, but he was also tough as wang leather and a good shot. Jason was glad to have him along. Alf Blodgett was there too, which surprised Jason a little, because the Englishman was such a newcomer to the settlement.
What are you doing here, Blodgett?
Look, this is my home now, and an Englishman's home is his castle. Can't have those damn barbarians thinking they can come in here, sack the place, and get away with it now, can we?
What about your saloon?
What? You mean Dr. Morelli's hospital? It'll be fine. My girls will look after the place while I'm gone.
Well then, if you're sure, we're glad to have you.
Jason moved on, spoke briefly to some of the other men, assuring himself that everyone was there of their own free will and understood the perilous nature of the mission they were about to undertake. Satisfied that they were and did, he raised his hands to get their attention and addressed all of them.
Thank you, men, for turning out. You all know what we're doing. We're going to rescue the ladies who were taken from here as prisoners, and we're going to teach Juan Alba and his gang that they can't attack the town of Fury and get away with it. I won't lie to you. Some of us won't be coming back. If you don't think this mission is worth risking your life, nobody will think any worse of you if you decide not to go. I know that a lot of you men have wives and children, and you'll be risking their futures as well. It's
Stop trying to talk us out of it, Jason. What sort of future will our families have if they have to live in constant fear of outlaws? If we smash Alba's band, then lawbreakers will think twice about coming to Fury from now on.
All right, Saul. I reckon you made your point. Everybody, mount up!
Rider's coming!
As Jason sent Cleo trotting down the street so that he could meet the newcomers, he recognized them as Ezra Dixon and several hands from the Slash D. Dixon reined in and motioned for his men to stop as Jason rode up to him and halted a few feet away. Jason spotted several men he hadn't seen before, including a lean, dark-faced man in black clothing, including a black Stetson with silver conchos on the band. He wondered if he was looking at the notorious Flint Gallister and some of the other gunfighters Dixon had hired for the looming war with Matt McDonald.
What do you want, Dixon?
Heard about the trouble you had here in town. Never would have happened if you hadn't squatted here in the first place and drew Alba's attention to you.
You got anything useful to say, or did you just come to be unpleasant?
Come to offer my help. I got no use for them damn banditos. If you're riding after them, me and some of my boys will go along.
You're Gallister?
You've heard of me, Marshal. I'm impressed.
Don't be. You coming along, too?
Flint and his pards are staying on the Slash D. I can't afford to go off and leave the place defenseless. If I did that, those hired guns of McDonald's would probably move in and take over whilst I was gone.
Damn it, Dixon. If you think I care about our feud right now, you're crazy. Those bastards have my sister and the woman I love.
Yeah, and I don't believe in taking chances. Flint and the others stay behind.
Then so do Bill Rye and his friends. I was gonna stop by the ranch and get him, but I don't trust you. I'd come back to find every building on my place burned down and all my stock slaughtered.
All right, if that's settled, we got an hour, maybe two, of daylight left. Let's put it to good use. Is everybody ready to ride? Yeah! Move out!
Jason waved a hand forward. He and Wash took the lead. He felt almost like he was in command of a military patrol. This rescue mission was going to succeed. He could feel it in his bones. The only question remaining was how high a price they would have to pay to get those women back alive. Megan McDonald had never been so scared in her whole life. She had seen violence before. She had been there when the Comanches attacked the wagon train and when the Apaches tried to lay waste to Fury. Those experiences had been terrifying, but they had also been so hectic that Megan hadn't had time for the fear to really soak in on her. That wasn't the case now. The outlaws had visited more death and destruction on Fury than even the Apaches would have. These men were more savage than the so-called savages. And since Megan had been their prisoner for hours now, she'd had plenty of time to think about the perilous situation in which she found herself. Jenny's quiet sobbing didn't help matters. The younger girl hadn't stopped crying ever since the outlaws had ceased their breakneck flight and pulled their horses back to a steady, inevitable ground-eating lope that carried them farther south, inexorably toward Mexico. The man who had Jenny in front of him on his horse's back didn't seem to mind her sobs. In fact, he acted like he found her terror amusing. Megan was trying very hard not to let herself cry. She didn't want to show any weakness. Not with the ordeal she and the other prisoners had facing them. Her captors might assault her, might even kill her. They wouldn't break her, she vowed. Brave intentions, but they might prove difficult to live up to. The man who had grabbed her up off the street as she tried to reach safety during the attack on the settlement still carried her in front of him on his horse. His left arm was looped around her, not particularly tightly now, but she knew that if she tried to escape, his grip would clamp down on her like an iron band. Earlier, he had fondled her breasts, squeezing them until she wanted to gasp in pain. Thankfully, he had seemed to grow bored with that, and now just held her on the horse. Her fear had eased a bit, and as it did, she realized that there had been something familiar about him when she caught a glimpse of his face as he jerked her up off her feet and dragged her onto the horse.
Don't you fight, little one, and Flores will treat you nice.
The outlaw was the man Jason had arrested a couple of weeks earlier for wounding Wash Keogh in Abigail's place. Megan wondered if the other two men who had been with Flores were also part of this bandit gang. It made sense that they would be. In fact, as she thought about it to distract her mind from her own desperate plight, she realized that the three hard cases must have ventured into Fury to scout out the settlement, to decide if it would be worth one Alba's while to raid it. Obviously, the answer had been yes. She knew the leader of the gang was Juan Alba, the so-called Scourge of the Borderlands, because Flores liked to talk, and his chatter had included several references to the notorious bandit chieftain. Megan had heard stories about Juan Alba, and knew that he was reputed to be without mercy. As long as they were in his hands, she and Jenny, along with Mrs. Morelli and Abigail Crimp, were facing a terrible fate. Even though Olympia and Abigail weren't riding right alongside her as Jenny and her captor were, Megan had caught glimpses of the two older women. She didn't know if any other prisoners had been taken from Fury. She hoped not. It was bad enough that the four of them were captives. The fewer prisoners there were, she thought, the easier it would be for Jason to rescue them. Megan had no doubt that Jason Fury would come after her and take her back to safety, if he was still alive. She refused to consider the possibility that he might not be, that he could have been killed in the fighting. As far as she knew, he hadn't even been in town when the raid started. He had ridden out to either Ezra Dixon's slash D or Matt McDonald's ranch to try one more time to bring about peace between the feuding factions. She hoped that he hadn't returned in time to be gunned down like so many others. The thought of the dying she had witnessed made a little shudder go through Megan's body. Flores felt it.
Getting tired of riding? We'll be there soon.
Megan didn't know where there was. They had traveled so far already that she felt certain they had crossed the border and were in Mexico. On the other hand, she wasn't really sure how far it was to the border. It was possible that they were still in Arizona territory, she supposed. Megan's head was spinning with possibilities, a few good, most overwhelmingly bad. She told herself to hang on to the hope she had, slender though they might be. The sun had dropped below the horizon a short time earlier, and the light left over from its setting was fading in a hurry. Megan didn't know if the outlaws would continue pressing on to the south after darkness fell, or if they would stop and make camp for the night. Nor did she know which of those things to hope for. She was exhausted and sore from being forced to ride astride, and stopping meant that the gang would no longer be putting more distance between themselves and any rescue attempt. But stopping also meant that the outlaws would have a chance to turn their full attention on their captives. Megan knew that most Western men, even the disreputable ones, respected women. But she wasn't naive enough to think that these animals would respect anything. As soon as the gang got a chance, she and Jenny and the two older women would be raped. Probably repeatedly. She could survive even that, she told herself. The important thing was to stay alive, no matter what else happened. But as she thought about how Jason would look at her in the future, knowing how soiled she was, she wondered if it would be better to just die in captivity. A short time later, the outlaws called a halt.
Now you get a chance to get down and stretch your legs, eh, little one?
Flores dismounted first, and then reached back up to take hold of her and lift her down from the horse. When he let go of her waist, he grabbed her wrist instead.
Don't try to run.
I'm not going anywhere.
Megan wanted to appear cooperative, so as not to anger him. But in the fading light, she found herself looking at the butt of his gun where it stuck up from the holster. If she could get her hands on it, she thought, she could put a bullet through his head, and then press the barrel to her own temple and pull the trigger. No. Jason would come after her. She couldn't allow herself to lose hope. Megan, Jenny, Olympia Morelli, and Abigail Crimp were herded together. As far as Megan could tell, they were the only four prisoners. She was glad that no other women had been dragged away from the settlement. Olympia put her arms around the sobbing Jenny and tried to comfort her. Megan found herself standing next to Abigail. Both of them had red hair, but the resemblance ended there. Abigail was at least 10 years older and was both taller and heavier, with a voluptuous figure that drew many admiring, well, lustful to be honest about it, glances from the men she encountered. The outlaws were no exception.
Stay close to me. If any of them start trying to bother you, I'll do my best to distract them.
But then they'll just...
Oh, they can't do anything to me that hasn't already been done plenty of times before, except kill me. And if that's what happens, then so be it.
You can't mean that.
No. The life I've led, I always expected to die young. Women like me don't get old unless they're lucky enough to find some man who wants to marry them, no matter what they've done in the past. Oh, it happens more than you might think, but... Well, I was never that fortunate. If some young fella like Jason Fury felt about me the way he does about you, then I'd have something to live for. As it is. You just stay close to me, like I said, and I will do what I can for you.
Thank you.
Megan didn't know what was going to happen, but it helped somehow to have Abigail close by. She didn't have to wait long to find out what their captors had in mind. One of the men jerked Jenny away from Olympia and started running his hands over her body. She struck wildly at him with her fists, but he just pushed her down onto the ground.
Go ahead and fight me, you little honey. I don't mind. Fact is, I like it better that way.
Leave her alone. You can have me instead. I won't struggle.
Forget it. Didn't you just hear me say I like it when a girl tries to fight? Besides, I want me some of that young stuff.
The outlaws who were standing around tensed and went for their guns, but they didn't draw. Instead, they stepped back as a huge man strode up, looming like a mountain against the last of the red light in the sky. He was at least 6.5 feet tall, with legs like tree trunks and massive arms and shoulders. A bristly black beard jutted out from his heavy chin. He wore a sombrero and a blood-red serape was thrown back over his right shoulder so that he could easily reach the holstered revolver on his hip. The aura of unquestioned command about the man, and the way the other outlaws drew back from him a little, as if he were a volcano about to erupt, told Megan that this was Juan Alba, the scourge of the borderlands.
I told you! No one bothers the women yet! You all know that we have plans for the prisoners, especially these two young ones. Any man who harms them in any way will answer to me!
It was obvious that none of the outlaws wanted that. They drew back to a respectful distance around the prisoners, while still remaining close enough to keep them from having any hope of escaping.
We will let the horses rest for half an hour, then push on.
With that order issued, Alba jerked his head in a curt nod and turned away. He didn't look back to see if his commands were being followed. He didn't have to. None of the men, not even the rugged and vicious Flores, would cross him.
Thank God.
Megan sank down on the ground to rest. Abigail sat beside her, as did Jenny and Olympia. Tears still ran down Jenny's face, but at least she was crying quietly now.
Don't get too comfortable.
What?
The leader stepping in like that was the first bit of luck we've had, but it is just a reprieve. It won't last. Don't start thinking this is over, Megan. I'd be willing to bet that it ain't. Not by a long shot.
But he said for the others to leave us alone.
Only because he's got other plans for us. Especially you and Jenny. Just what do you think those plans are going to be?
Oh.
Megan had no idea, but whatever it was that Juan Alba had in mind for the captives, it wouldn't be anything good. Jason was glad to have Wash Keo along as a member of the posse, since the old mountain man had a reputation as a good tracker. That skill might come in handy before this job was done. But starting out anyway, a blind man could have followed the trail left by the outlaws. 50 galloping horses left plenty of sign, even on hard ground, and Alba's men weren't even trying to cover their tracks. Why should they, Jason thought. It was doubtful that any force in the territory short of the army itself could stand up against them in battle. Even some cavalry patrols would be outnumbered and outgunned against the bandit horde. As the sun set and the light began to fade, Matt McDonald brought his horse alongside Jason and Wash.
We're gonna push on even after dark, aren't we?
What about it, Wash?
I ain't sure. It's mighty hard to follow a trail at night. I ain't saying it can't be done, especially if there's a moon. But you run the risk of losing the trail good and proper.
Don't be ridiculous. We know which way they're going. They're headed almost due south. They're making a run for the border. All we have to do is steer by the stars and keep going the same direction.
That's all well and good if they keep going the same way. What if they veer off some other direction?
Well, they can't go east. They'll find themselves running into Tucson or Camp Grant if they do. And there's nothing the other way but a hell of a lot of nothing.
Well, that's pretty much what they'll find south of the border, too. Plenty of desert and a few mountain ranges. Less than they plan on going all the way to the Gulf of California.
How far is that, Wash?
To the Gulf? Shoot, I don't know. I ain't never been across that way. I'd say 80, 90 miles.
Close enough they could reach it in a few days of hard travel, in other words.
Yeah, but it'd be hard travel, all right. Sonora's a mighty inhospitable place. Ain't much water to be had.
They'd have plenty of water once they got to that gulf you were talking about.
Yeah, salt water. Now, like I was saying, there's water in the mountains and probably a few tanks in the desert where you could dig down and find more. If they was careful, and if they knew what they was doing, I reckon they could make the gulf without too much trouble. Why would they go there, though? Chances are they'll hole up somewheres in the mountains instead. That makes a heap more sense.
Yeah, I know. The other was just a thought.
But the idea stayed with Jason, even when he called a halt to let the horses rest. He gathered the most trusted members of the group around him to discuss their options.
We can stop for the night and wait until morning to push on. That way we'll be sure of not losing the trail.
That gives those damn outlaws more time to...
You don't have to watch what you say, Salmon. We all know what they're liable to do to the prisoners. That can't be a consideration now. We're just trying to get those women back alive, that's all.
Speak for yourself, Fury. My sister is one of those captives, dammit.
And so is mine. We have to be realistic about this. Saving their lives is the first priority. Anybody disagree? All right. Why don't we wait here until the moon comes up? Then we'll try to push on and see how much trouble it is to follow the trail that way. If it looks like we're in danger of losing it, we'll call a halt until morning. But if we don't have to do that, at least they won't have gained a whole night on us.
One by one, the men nodded their agreement.
We'll be relying a great deal on you, Walsh. You'll have to tell us if we're going astray.
I'll try not to let you down, son.
Hell.
We ought to just head for the border as fast as we can without worrying about following the trail.
Jason tried to ignore him. He knew that Matt was wrong, and so did most of the others. But not all of them. As they waited for the moon to rise, a group of men approached Jason.
Marshal, how come we're dilly-dallying around here when we could be chasing them outlaws?
We're waiting for the moon to come up so we can follow the tracks left by the bandits.
Well, there's no need for that. We should just light a shuck from Mexico. That's where they're headed.
You know that for sure, do you?
Well, yes. Why, McDonald's...
Don't worry. You didn't give anything away. I figured Matt was behind this. You know, on the high seas, inciting a mutiny is a serious crime.
What in the blazes are you talking about?
I'm talking about the way you're questioning my judgment and trying to turn this posse against me. I don't like it, and I won't stand for it.
This is still a free country, damn it. I've got a right to say whatever I want.
You don't have a right to put those prisoners in even more danger than they already are. Listen to me. We're waiting for the moon to rise so that we can follow the trail those outlaws left. And as soon as it does, we'll be pushing on. Anybody who doesn't agree with that can turn around and ride on back to Fury. And good riddance.
Yeah, that's just like you. So high and mighty, lording it over everybody else just because you've got that damn tin star on.
Oh? Is that all it is?
Without thinking about what he was doing, Jason reached for the badge on his chest and unpinned it from his shirt. He slapped it into the palm of a startled Saul Cohen.
Hang on to that for me, will you?
Jason, you shouldn't...
Suddenly, without waiting for Jason to turn around, Matt lunged at him, swinging a roundhouse right at his head. Jason ducked so that Matt's punch went over his head. He stepped in and hooked a short but powerful blow to Matt's midsection. Matt moved back a step, his back hunched against the pain. He didn't double over, though, and he was ready when Jason tried to follow the right with a left cross. Matt blocked it and shot out a left jab that landed on Jason's jaw and rocked his head back. Jason's hat fell off, but he caught his balance and struck swiftly. Matt's looping right would have taken Jason's head off if it had connected. But Jason was able to jerk back so that he felt the wind of Matt's fist passing right in front of his face. Matt recovered and launched a kick at Jason's groin. Jason twisted aside and took the impact on his thigh. It was hard enough to knock him backward. Matt tackled Jason and both men went down. They rolled over and over. Since they were just about the same size and weight, neither had an advantage over the other when it came to wrestling, but Matt had the edge in viciousness. He drove his knee into Jason's belly. The blow sent pain blossoming through Jason's body and forced the air out of his lungs. Before he could drag any air down his throat, Matt's hands closed around it. Jason slammed both his fists into the sides of Matt's head, which loosened Matt's grip enough for Jason to break free. Arching his back off the ground, Jason flung Matt off to the side. Matt tried to get up, but Jason's pile-driving right sent him sprawling on his back. Jason leapt on top of him. Finally, Salmon Kendall and Alf Blodgett caught hold of Jason's arms and hauled him upright. They dragged him back away from Matt's now unconscious form.
Take it easy, Jason. He's an annoying son of a bitch, I'll grant you that, but you don't want to kill him.
Don't be so sure about that.
Jason shrugged free and dragged the back of a hand across his mouth, leaving a red smear on the skin from a bleeding lip. He stood there with his chest heaving as he glared at Matt.